The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Tuesday. It's a brand new week here at the Nicole Sandler Show. Yes, we begin our week on Tuesdays. Welcome to it. And I apologize for being out on Friday. As I told you a week or so ago, I made the decision a couple of weeks ago to wean off of one of the medications that I'm taking. I've been open about the fact that I suffer from depression. And I've taken a number of antidepressants over the years. And for the last year or so, I've been taking a drug called Abilify. And I was warned once by a psychiatrist that Abilify is a nasty drug. And she said she'd never put me on it. But the current psychiatrist that I'm seeing thought it would be a good addition to my to what I was taking. And I let... I let that get the best of me. And so I went on it. But what I've noticed, and you may have noticed it too, is that I think it has dulled me to the point where I sometimes have trouble formulating thoughts, she says as she fumfers her way through this explanation. And so I made the decision that I need to get off of it. Well, getting off of one of these drugs, whether it be a straight antidepressant or something like Abilify, which I believe is more of an antipsychotic drug, is not as easy as just stopping. You have to wean yourself off of it. And the withdrawal symptoms can be really bad. So it's been a hellish couple of weeks so far. And I've got at least another week of it ahead of me. So it's one of the reasons I was out on Friday. And I ask you to bear with me as I work my way through this. It's not fun, but I think in the long run, I'll be better for it. So anyway, that's where I am now. I am back. And boy, there's a lot of news, as seems to be the norm these days. Right now, Mark Zuckerberg is testifying before Congress. It's first of 2 days of testimony. He's doing a joint Senate committee between, I know I've got it in What's News somewhere. It's a joint hearing by the Senate Judiciary and Commerce Committees. So this is going to be a long one this afternoon. It just got underway about, maybe 20 minutes or so ago. Should be interesting considering the Senate is old. And I think a lot of these senators don't really have a good grasp of what Facebook is, what social media is. Although some of them use it, we know Donald Trump uses Twitter, don't we? Facebook is another character. So we'll see. I was reading some commentary that staffers probably have a much better grasp of it than the senators themselves do. But there you go. There's a little minor debate going on in the chat room at NicoleSandler.com, where you can stream the show live from at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live, about neckties. Somebody had commented that Mark Zuckerberg was today finally wearing a suit and tie. And someone else said, well, as if he couldn't afford it, tech people. And I chimed in and said, you know what, if I own my own business, I wouldn't wear a suit and tie either. If you go to Congress, of course, you're going to dress up and you're going to wear a suit and tie. But at work, you're going to be comfortable, right? And Somebody else said, I don't wear a tie except for formal occasions. And I opined, as I have done many times in the past, that I think neckties are stupid. I do not get the use of a necktie. I think eventually, you know, in history books, if civilization survives, you're going to see pictures of men wearing, you know, neckties. Sort of like the old wigs that they used to wear in Congress and in courtrooms, you know, esquires, lawyers would wear those white wigs. They serve the same purpose. I think they're supposed to cover the buttons. I don't know, but they're ridiculous. And Vermont Gina says, I'd wear a tie over nylons and heels. Well, I agree with you. There's a reason I don't wear nylons and heels either. I'd have a hard time in the corporate world these days. I used to when I worked in radio in New York. When I was much younger, I dressed the part. Tripp says, I even rock an ascot on the special occasion. Now, that I would pay to see. An ascot, that's one thing. But a tie, a necktie, especially the way Donald Trump wears them, they're really, really stupid. It is Tuesday. Gotta Laugh is usually here with us on Tuesdays, but today is her day, too. She's got a doctor's appointment today, so she can't be here. So our old friend Jack Rice will chime in her stead. And I called on Jack Rice because he's one of the first people I thought of when I heard the news that Donald Trump's attorney's office and home had been raided. Donald Trump's attorney, meaning Michael Cohen, you know, the fixer, the guy who refers to himself as Trump's Ray Donovan. Yeah, that guy. Jack Rice, a former Air America colleague of mine, who is an attorney, who is a former CIA agent, is one of the most interesting people I know. And I could just listen to him forever. So Jack Rice will join us in the second half hour of the show. But there is a lot of news, so I thought we would get right to it. We'll do What's News Live today, shall we? Let's get to it.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
FBI officials yesterday raided the Manhattan office and home of Michael Cohen, the longtime attorney of the president, seizing records related to a 2016 payment he made to adult film star Stormy Daniels, who claimed to have had a sexual encounter with him. The raid came as part of an investigation referred by the special counsel, Robert Mueller, to federal prosecutors in New York, this according to Stephen Ryan, an attorney for Cohen. Carol Leoneg is one of the Washington Post reporters who broke the story.
We have learned a lot. One, that the search warrant that sought these records indicated that prosecutors and investigators are examining Michael Cohen, the president's personal lawyer and confidant, for possible bank fraud, wire fraud, and campaign finance violations. We know that the search warrant asked specifically for information that had to do with payments to Stormy Daniels, an adult film or porn star that was about to, during the campaign, allege that the president and she had had an affair in a public interview. We understand that the search also sought records that had to do with Michael Cohen's personal finances, his bank records, his tax information, and there's more. We're also learning that investigators have been working on this for many, 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 many weeks. Uh-oh. And that while this may look very dramatic and like the start of something, it may actually be the culmination of something much deeper, looking at Michael Cohen. I want to add one more thing, which is Michael Cohen's lawyer, Stephen Ryan, told us today that he found this raid inappropriate because it gathered up materials that were attorney-client communications and privileged, and that this was not necessary because Michael Cohen was totally cooperative with investigators and would have shared information with them if requested.
Sure he would have. We'll talk more about that with Jack Rice when he joins us in the second half hour of the show today. In the middle of a press opportunity with the generals and John Bolton yesterday about what should be done about Syria and Assad's use of chemical weapons, Trump went off on the news that Cohen's office and home had been raided. And he went off. He raged.
It's a disgraceful situation. It's a total witch hunt. I've been saying it for a long time. I've wanted to keep it down. We've given, I believe, over a million pages worth of documents to the special counsel. They continue to just go forward, and here we are talking about Syria. We're talking about a lot of serious things with the greatest fighting force ever. And I have this witch hunt constantly going on for over 12 months now. And actually much more than that. You could say it was right after I won the nomination it started. And it's a disgrace. It's frankly a real disgrace. It's an attack on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for. So when I saw this and when I heard it like you did, I said, that is really now in a whole new level of unfairness. The Attorney General made a terrible mistake when he did this and when he recused himself, or he should have certainly let us know if he was going to recuse himself.
Boy, and he just doesn't give up, does he?
Put a different Attorney General in. So he made what I consider to be a very terrible mistake for the country. All I can say is after looking for a long period of time, and even before the special counsel, because it really started just about from the time I won the nomination. And you look at what took place and what happened, and it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. I've been president now for what seems like a lengthy period of time. We've done a fantastic job. We've beaten ISIS. We have just about 100% of the caliphate or the land.
God.
Our economy is incredible. The stock market dropped a lot today as soon as they heard the noise of, you know, this nonsense that's going on. It dropped a lot. It was up, way up, and then it dropped quite a bit at the end, a lot. But that we have to go through that, we've had that hanging over us now from the very, very beginning. And yet the other side, they don't even bother looking. And the other side is where there are crimes, and those crimes are obvious. Lies under oath all over the place. Emails that are knocked out, that are acid washed and deleted. Nobody's ever seen. 33,000 emails are deleted after getting a subpoena for Congress. And nobody bothers looking at that.
That's not true.
And many,
but,
many
okay.
other things. So I just think it's a disgrace that a thing like this can happen. With all of that being said, we are here to.
I cut him off. Oh, that's good. With all that being said, he was there to talk about Syria. He actually went on a lot longer than that, believe it. That was the edited version of his rant. Trump again, well, not necessarily floated the idea, but when he was asked about the idea of firing Mueller, he wouldn't say no.
No. No, I'm not. Why don't I just fire Mueller? Well, I think it's a disgrace what's going on. We'll see what happens. But I think it's really a sad situation when you look at what many people have said. You should fire him. Again, they found nothing. And in finding nothing, that's a big statement. If you know the person who's in charge of the investigation, you know all about that, Deputy Rosenstein, Rod Rosenstein. He wrote the letter, very critical, of Comey. One of the things I said, I fired Comey. Well, I turned out to do the right thing, because you look at all of the things that he's done and the lies, and you look at what's gone on at the FBI with the insurance policy and all of the things that happened. Turned out I did the right thing. But he signed, as you know, he also signed the FISA warrant. So Rod Rosenstein, who's in charge of this, signed a FISA warrant. And he also signed a letter that was essentially saying to fire James Comey. And he was right about that. He was absolutely right. So we'll see what happens. I think it's disgraceful, and so does a lot of other people. This is a pure and simple witch hunt.
So does a lot of other people. That's your president speaking. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg is on Capitol Hill today, testifying before Congress for the first time. Today, it's a joint hearing by the Senate Judiciary and Commerce Committees, where lawmakers are demanding answers about how Cambridge Analytica, the British data firm hired by the Trump campaign, was able to improperly obtain data on upwards of 87 million Facebook users. Larry Kudlow, the president's new chief economic advisor, was more concerned about what Zuckerberg will be wearing than what he'll say. I kid you not, this was Larry Kudlow This is what we're dealing with now.
Mark Zuckerberg goes to the Hill this week to testify.
Yeah.
Does the administration feel that Facebook should be regulated?
Is he going to wear a suit and tie and a clean white shirt?
No clue.
That's my biggest question.
Do you think Facebook
is going to behave like an adult as a major corporate leader, or give me this phony baloney? What is it? Hoodies and dungarees, and what is that kind of signal?
You don't think much of Mark Zuckerberg? I take it.
I think I could help him clean up his act.
Help him clean up his... See, this goes back to what we were talking about before, which pisses me off. Mark Zuckerberg runs his own company. He's entitled to dress however he wants. And if it's hoodies and dungarees, yes, what we used to call jeans, then so be it. He's wearing a suit and tie today on Capitol Hill, just in case anybody was wondering. He cleans up nicely. And Larry Kudlow... I don't even know what to say about that guy. Trump did meet with his top military advisors last night to decide what to do about Syria and its latest attack on its own people with what appears to be a nerve agent.
It was an atrocious attack. It was horrible. You don't see things like that as bad as the news is around the world. You just don't see those images. We are studying that situation extremely closely. We are meeting with our military and everybody else. And we'll be making some major decisions over the next 24 to 48 hours. We are very concerned when a thing like that can happen. This is about humanity. We're talking about humanity. And it can't be allowed to happen. So we'll be... looking at that barbaric act and studying what's going on. We're trying to get people in there. As you know, it's been surrounded, so it's very hard to get people in because not only has it been hit, it's been surrounded. And if they're innocent, why aren't they allowing people to go in and prove? Because, as you know, they're claiming they didn't make the attack. So if it's Russia, if it's Syria, if it's Iran, if it's all of them together, we'll figure it out and we'll know the answers quite soon. So we're looking at that very, very strongly and very seriously.
So this right after Trump had said he was going to pull all our troops out of Syria. Now comes word of this chemical attack. And now he's talking about a military strike. Of course, he always says he won't telescope what he'll do. What we do know is that he canceled his trip to the summit of the Americas in Peru. It was set to begin on Friday. It would have been Trump's first visit to Latin America since taking office. Instead, Vice President Mike Pence will travel to the gathering. This according to a statement by White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, who said the president will remain in the United States to oversee the American response to Syria and to monitor developments around the world. Also not going is Secretary of Defense James Mattis, who says all options are on the table.
Now, the first thing we have to look at is why a chemical weapon still being used at all when Russia was the framework guarantor of removing all the chemical weapons. And so working with our allies and partners from NATO to Qatar and elsewhere, we are going to address this issue.
Can you rule out taking action, launching airstrikes against Assad, Mr. Secretary?
I don't rule out anything right now.
It doesn't rule out anything right now. Closer to home, for me anyway, here in Florida, Governor Rick Voldemort Scott officially threw his hat in the ring to run for Senate against incumbent Democrat Bill Nelson, also another, you know, bastion of boringness.
People are flocking to Florida.
This is Rick Scott.
Because this is where you can live the dream of this country. Over 300,000 people are moving to the state a year. That was not true. Between 2006 and 2010, people were leaving the state because you couldn't find a job, you're losing your house, and you might be losing your car. So now we've got to take that same mission to D.C.
God help us all.
We've got to take that same can-do attitude that it doesn't matter what the naysayers say. It doesn't matter what the critics say. If you ignore them, think of what you can accomplish. So today... with my wife by my side, I'm announcing I am running for the U.S. Senate for the great state of Florida.
Ay, ay, ay. I'm telling you, Bill Nelson's not great. But he's an improvement. He's head and tails above Rick Scott any day of the week. And this is going to be possibly the most expensive Senate race of 2018. This is what we're in for, people. Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert is leaving the Trump administration, yet another exit in a chaotic few months of personnel changes. Bossert, it was a favorite of Chief of Staff John Kelly, who may not be there much longer either. He's leaving one day after National Security Advisor John Bolton began the job. Bossert is an ally of former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, was believed to be on shaky footing in the Bolton era, and he resigned 2 days after Michael Anton, the National Security Council spokesman, also quit. Washington Post reports that Bossert, a longtime government official who was often behind nuts and bolts planning of the administration's initiatives, wasn't a big name, but he was liked by the president, allegedly, senior administration officials said, and often defended Trump's agenda in meetings. He was the one who was in the little bit of coverage that Puerto Rico got in the days following Hurricane Maria. He was the one who often did the briefings, saying how everything was great in Puerto Rico. That was Tom Bossert, and now he's gone. And today is Equal Pay Day. Today is the day that, say, if you worked a normal corporate America job and you're a woman, you would have had to have worked all of last year through today, April 10th, to make what your male counterparts made in 2017. Just let that sink in for a moment. Yeah, that's what I thought. And that's a bit of what's news for now. As always, I do my best to cover some of the big stories. There's only so much you could get to in a few minutes. But that's a bit of what's happening today. And coming up in a few minutes, normally we have Gotta Laugh on Tuesday. She's out at an appointment today. So our old pal Jack Rice will join us. But first, let's check in with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report.
It's Tuesday, April 10, 2018.
Have you made mistakes?
I think this is something that needs to be corrected.
And it was a mistake.
It was a mistake by my team.
So do you take responsibility?
I'm fixing it.
Do you take responsibility?
I'm fixing the problem.
Rising tide of ethics scandals continue to engulf EPA Chief Scott Pruitt.
This is a fight for our world as we know it.
Canadian pipelines future in doubt amid relentless opposition. November's Keystone pipeline spill was twice the size of previous estimates. Plus, Michigan gives Nestle the green light to pump groundwater while it ends bottled water deliveries to Flint.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If anyone needs security at Disneyland, it's Scott Pruitt. A man who even Mickey and Minnie Mouse would tell to go himself.
This is your Green News Report.
Hey, Space Mountain's gonna be underwater in 10 years, you son of a bitch! Get it, Minnie! Get it!
Okay, Desi Doyen, despite scandal after scandal upon scandal, EPA Chief Scott Pruitt still has his job?
Yes, it'll be interesting to see how much longer he will have it. The acting director of the Trump administration's Office of Government Ethics over the weekend took the very unusual step of pressuring the EPA Ethics Office to investigate those questionable actions taken by Administrator Scott Pruitt. BuzzFeed News now says that the EPA Ethics Office has kicked that request up to the agency's Inspector General, which has actual subpoena authority. President Trump has continued to voice support for Pruitt, who has been under heightened scrutiny amid a rising tide of revelations about his outsized spending of taxpayer dollars on personal security and first-class travel, and a shady below-market D.C. rental deal and other questionable ethical actions.
Rising tide. I see what you did there.
Meanwhile, in British Columbia, on Sunday, Texas-based energy giant Kinder Morgan announced that it has suspended all non-essential construction on its Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion project. That That decision came just hours after hundreds of protesters blocked the entrances to a Kinder Morgan pipeline worksite. It's part of a relentless civil disobedience campaign by First Nations tribes. Kinder Morgan suggested that it may even cancel the project, setting a May 31st deadline for stakeholder talks on how to proceed. The Trans Mountain Pipeline would ship heavy tar sands oil from Alberta across British Columbia to overseas markets, and it's also opposed by BC's provincial government. The suspension is a setback for Canada's oil sands industry, but a victory for the First Nations, says Grand Chief of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, Stuart Phillips.
Yesterday, Kinder Morgan blinked. They took a step back, and today, I think after probably some long hours in the boardroom last night, they've come to the inevitable conclusion that you simply can't ram a pipeline through in the face of such opposition, legal, political, on-the-ground opposition. It's impossible.
The suspension occurs in the wake of a new report revealing that a pipeline spill on the controversial Keystone Pipeline on a South Dakota farm last November was actually double the size of what pipeline owner TransCanada had initially reported to state regulators.
See, I told you when it happened. Don't listen to their numbers. It is always bigger than they tell you at first when they estimate the size of these spills. These oil companies, these pipeline companies, they always lowball it when they give those numbers.
You were right. It turns out that the pipeline spill in South Dakota totaled more than 400,000 gallons. Mm. Reuters also reports that the Keystone Pipeline system has leaked substantially more oil in the United States and more often than the company originally predicted in its pre-construction risk assessments back in 2010.
And just by the way, the Keystone XL itself has yet to be completed, correct?
Yes, the Keystone XL is still awaiting approval in Nebraska.
Don't tell Donald Trump, he thinks it's already built.
In Michigan, the state's Republican Governor Rick Snyder has announced the state will end bottled water deliveries to the city of Flint 4 years after emergency managers appointed by Governor Snyder instituted cost-cutting measures that contaminated the entire city's water system with toxic lead. The city is in the process of replacing lead service pipes, but thousands of those lead pipes still remain. The governor's office says the city's water now tests below federal limits for lead contamination, but the New York Times reports that the water can still pick up lead when it flows through those thousands of remaining lead service lines in the city. The announcement comes less than a week after a Michigan state agency approved a plan by Nestle Waters of North America to increase the amount of groundwater that it draws from the state for its bottled water manufacturing by 60%. The Michigan Department of Environmental Quality approved the extraction permit despite the public opposition that attracted a record number of public comments. 75 comments were in favor. 81,000 comments were against.
Oh, man.
The commenters objected to a corporation profiting from extracting and shipping the state's water to other states, while cities like Flint struggle to get clean water.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Cool, clear water. The nights are cool and I'm a fool.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet. But their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
All right. We are back, and I'm always thrilled to welcome our next guest to the show. Jack Rice is a lawyer. He's a radio host, a former Air America colleague of mine, and a former CIA agent, and again, always a great guest. And when the news broke yesterday about the raid on Michael Cohen's office, home, and hotel room, I immediately thought that Jack would be a great person to talk with about it. So, hello, Jack Rice.
Oh, well, it's great to be with you again. I sure appreciate it. I have to tell you, I just walked out of a courtroom. I mean, as a former prosecutor, as a criminal defense attorney, I've been on both sides of the issues of getting subpoenas, trying to get in to get the kinds of evidence that you want, or fighting them on the other side. And so a piece of this really, it's grabbing the whole country, but it's grabbed me sort of professionally, too. So I'm really, really happy to talk about it.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. And I'm glad the timing worked out, because it would have sucked if I got you in the middle of the courtroom.
By the way, I'll have you know, I literally went to the front. I pulled your Twitter feed that you mentioned my name on. I put it in front of court administration. I said, guys, I apologize. I have to do this interview with Nicole. Are you okay with sort of pushing me up the calendar so I could get it done? And they said, so long as you said that Ramsey County let you do it, where
wow.
I am right now. And so this is my shout out to them to let me out early. So there you have it.
Well, thank you to them and thank you to you. So what do you say to Donald Trump, who first thing this morning tweeted, the attorney-client privilege is dead?
I'm outraged. I'm outraged, first of all, when he said this is an attack upon America or on all of us.
On all of
just
us. Yes.
Not. I mean, fundamentally, we have to look at what it is that's going on here. And I think people need to realize the steps that one has to go through to actually get the warrants that the FBI received in this case. Yes, Bob Mueller had a piece of this as part of his investigation, apparently, but part of the regs of the Justice Department is essentially that anything that falls outside of the quote-unquote Russia question and sort of the broad aspects of what that all means needs to go back to the Justice Department. So what Bob Mueller's people did is they went to Justice, went to the Assistant Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General, and the Deputy Attorney General then turned around, went to the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York, who then recused himself because he's essentially a Trump supporter.
Right.
It bounced back to the Attorney General, who then went essentially to the court with the FBI in New York and said, here is our justification. We believe a crime has been committed. This is why we believe a crime is committed. This is why we need to get this information, which was actually outside of what you would normally expect, because you would expect lawyers to provide that information. But it tells me that they were doubting the cooperation of Cohen in this case. And so they actually got a judge to sign off on the warrants themselves to go back in to his office and at least apparently a residence of sorts to get this information. So this isn't tied to Cohen. This isn't tied to the left, the right, or anybody else. This is the U.S. criminal justice system at work. This is America. So to call it anything short of that is an outrage.
Right. Well, Trump just likes to twist things to his advantage. As somebody in the chat room said earlier, everything's always somebody else's fault, not his. Now, he must be seething that the U.S. attorney in charge of the Southern District of New York recused himself because this was a Trump appointee.
Yeah, I think he probably is. But again, I do appreciate the professionalism that comes from something like this. And I have to tell you, Nicole, I mean, as a former CIA case officer, as a former prosecutor on this issue, I spent a lot of time in war zones over the years. I got hit by an IED in 06 when I was with 10th Mountain Division. I've been everywhere. And part of the problem that I'm seeing with this latest rant from this president is that he has been more than willing to tear down the Pentagon, the Central Intelligence Agency, Justice, the FBI, and the list goes on and on and on. Because apparently everything is a conspiracy and everybody is involved, and that America is Donald Trump and vice versa. It's a very a la GM from the 60s. And I think it's critically important that we realize that the rule of law actually means something in the world, and it means something in this country. So kudos to the U.S. attorney who actually stepped aside and said, let's let the people who have no skin in the game make the decision.
You were probably in court, Jack, so I don't know if you heard. Today in the White House press briefing, Sarah Sanders was asked if Trump has the authority to fire Mueller, and she said, we believe he does. Do you believe he does?
Yes.
You do?
He does. I mean, here's the thing. Is does he have the right to do it? The answer is, it appears that technically he has the right, or at least he has the right to go to the acting attorney general and say, fire Bob Mueller. Now, whether he should is an entirely different game, because what that really does is support the obstruction concerns of everybody in the room. This idea that this would cause a constitutional crisis goes without saying. It appears that there are many, even Republicans, and this is outlandish to me, that are starting to lean towards this issue. And I think that that's what's particularly critical here. So he has the right, based upon what the essentially the law says he can do, but whether it's appropriate to do it under these circumstances is another game.
Right. Well, no, it seems like nothing he does is appropriate, but he doesn't seem to listen to anybody around him. Maybe he has up until now, but right now it seems like the news of this raid has really gotten him, made him nuts. I mean, more so than usual.
I can tell you that if we look at what we have in front of us, when I first heard about this myself, what I thought was, this may be the game changer. And the reason is that, you know, we've been watching a noose that's been getting closer and closer to the president over the last year. And what is most important in this case is that this is his right-hand man. Mm-hmm. This is somebody who has worked very closely with this president over the years. And one of the issues that apparently is particularly crucial is this question of the role of Cohen himself. Because you can talk about something called the attorney-client privilege, and it absolutely exists. And I've argued that very issue myself on both sides. But at the same time, here's something that isn't privileged between a client and their attorney, and that's a crime that may have been committed. That is not protected. And so the issue here is what Cohen was doing and what it all means. But this may be the front end of a very, very thick wedge, because Cohen was involved in a whole series of things with this president, including negotiations with some of his properties in places like Georgia, Republic of Georgia. Azerbaijan. And those ones are particularly serious because of the tax implications that may be coming out of this. And this opens up this president to discovery demands to take a closer look at his business records. And this is something he has fought at every level to avoid. So this may be the game changer that people have been wondering about. This is the one that I would strongly suggest people really start to read about, study about, and try to understand.
You know, there's a great article. I always read Greg Sargent's Plumline blog in the Washington Post. It's a great morning primer, if you will. And Paul Waldman occasionally writes for them. And he wrote a piece today about, well, how corrupt Trump is. In fact, he says he may well be the single most corrupt major business figure in the United States of America, and then gave a whole bunch of explanations on that. But then he says this: as for Cohen, he may be called Trump's personal attorney, but Trump has plenty of lawyers. Cohen's real job was to be a deal maker and fixer. He's the guy Trump would use when he wanted to do a shady deal with a Kazakh oligarch to build a tower in the Republic of Georgia, as you just mentioned, Jack. He's the guy Trump would have used to negotiate a payment of hush money to a porn star. He's up to his eyeballs in Trump's business. I don't know what they're going to find when they start combing through Cohen's computers and cell phone records, but I know it's going to be pretty darn interesting. That's an understatement, huh?
Yeah, I would stand by that. By the way, I'm going to be in Tbilisi in Georgia in a couple of weeks, and this is one of the reasons I'm going to be there. We can talk after that. But
yeah.
But part of this issue is exactly that, is that this question of the relationships that this president had prior to his becoming president. And one of the things that we have learned is that the possibility of indictments and depositions and a whole series of other things that can be done to private citizens can be done to this president, even as a sitting president. We learned that from President Clinton's efforts from years ago. And so this opens this entire question up to something fundamentally different. And what Mr. Cohen has apparently been involved in, or at least allegedly been involved in, really, really opens up an entirely new game. This really is fundamentally different. And let's be honest, you can take a look at how this president has generally run his operations. He has cut corners over and over and over again. He's filed for bankruptcy multiple times as a result of those corners that he has cut. And some of the involvement that he has had, not only in 2015, with the potential building of Trump Tower in Moscow. I'm just back from Russia about 3 weeks now, and I was there during the elections. And part of what was going on there was also something involving a tax question that could provide some clarity with more information coming from Mr. Cohen's records. So there's like 10 or 15 different things that people are very interested in seeing that go way beyond whether or not he was paying off a porn star to not talk about a sexual relationship.
Oh, without a doubt. That could be the thing that opens the floodgates, though.
Well, actually, you're right. And that might actually be one of the easiest, because this actually may be fraud of a different nature when it comes to election card fraud, because in this particular case, you have very specific obligations to disclose that information if you're using it to benefit a candidate. And in this case, that was never disclosed. And it seems very clear that there's more information on that issue that needs to be addressed. It's not about trying to convince a former Playboy playmate to not talk about a relationship. It's about a failure to disclose, just like an obstruction charge is an easy thing to prove. Failure to disclose is a very easy thing to prove.
Just the other day on Air Force One, Trump was asked if he knew about the $130,000 payoff to Stormy Daniels, and he said no. I'd play the sound, but it's the noise of the airplane is too loud. You can't even hear it. So did that make matters much worse for him? I mean, he flat out lied, and he threw Michael Cohen under the bus.
Well, one thing we do know, I mean, just when it comes to that statement, It potentially opens up Cohen. It potentially opens up the president. First of all, he can lie to the press all he wants. That's not a crime. And frankly, he has lied to the press simply because it's been proven over and over again that he's purposely told them falsehoods, which is a lie. So we know that. But the idea that he would say he knew nothing about this, he didn't provide him the money to do it, it was Cohen himself. The real question then becomes one of what it is that a lawyer has the right to do, and every state actually provides licenses to their lawyers. And in New York in particular, there are certain things that lawyers can do for their clients. One of those things is you can't negotiate agreements on behalf of your client without your client agreeing to that agreement, which would bind them. So in other words, if he never actually negotiated something on behalf, or I should say, if he negotiated something on behalf of Donald Trump but never bothered to tell Donald Trump about that, that may actually be an ethical violation against Cohen himself, which is important because that could open him up in other ways which could provide more justification to go after him at deeper levels by justice. So there's a whole series of things that are sitting out there right now that we're just starting to understand. And we don't have a lot of information yet, but the more that I'm getting, the more that I'm watching this in a way that I've never looked at what was going on with Page or Manafort or Gates or Flynn or anybody else. This is really about the kinds of behavior that this president pre-presidentially was involved in.
But now the Mueller investigation is only into the Russian involvement in the election, isn't it? Is this something that comes under the purview of Mueller?
Well, yes and no, because part of what goes on is you have to think of it like this. Imagine if I had a search warrant to go into your house and I'm looking for a weapon.
Okay.
And if I see a pile of cocaine sitting on the table, I automatically know that there's a crime that's been committed, or there's something that appears to be a crime that's been committed. I have the right to now follow through with something based upon just being in the room. So part of it is that Mueller has the ability to follow through with those issues. But at the same time, his area of purview, where he's really focusing, is on the Russia piece, the potential obstruction pieces that are coming beyond those issues, and the lying to the FBI, which is also a federal crime. Those are all issues that he's primarily focusing upon. But as he comes across other issues that may be crimes, he can keep it or he can spin it off. And spinning it off is part of this process, because what we're seeing is not just with the Southern District of New York, there's investigations that are taking place right now and potentially charges that could be filed against this president by the Attorney General of New York State.
Right.
By the Attorney General of Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and others who are looking at things that he may have done there as well. So there's a whole series of issues that are sitting out there. We have never seen anything like this in our lifetimes. This is nothing like Richard Nixon. Nixon was laughable. That was sort of comical, amateurish behavior trying to run politics. This is about something else altogether different.
Jack Rice is our guest. This is fascinating. The reason that it's so important that the attorneys general of New York and Massachusetts and other places could pick up the mantle here is because while Trump is able to, you know, do federal pardons, he has no power of pardon over state crimes. So if Eric Schneiderman of New York were to pick up this, say, Michael Cohen case and run with it, that's something that Trump has no pardon power over, right?
Absolutely. That is the big part of this. He has the ability to pardon anybody who has been convicted of a federal crime, but there are limitations to those pardons. And as a result of it, states have authority in their own right. And by the way, for all of those Republicans who are out there talking about states' rights and pounding their chest when it was convenient for them,
uh-huh.
this is an example when that's the kind of thing that will come back and bite you in the ass. And it will, because states do have power. It is unilateral to some degree over federal power, and the states can stand up in ways that the feds may not stand up, and they could stand up and go after this president if they so choose, if they believe they can do that. And it's their burden, obviously. This is criminal law. The state and the feds have, if it's going to go federal, if it's going to go criminal, they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a crime has been committed. But they could potentially have the right to do that.
So, Jack, the fact that the Southern District of New York is the ones who issued the search warrant to go into Michael Cohen's, it was his office, it was his hotel room. I guess he's staying at a hotel in Midtown Manhattan while his home is being renovated or something. But apparently they went to his home as well. They sent three teams out at the same time, and they had to have, excuse the expression, a taint team to go in first to go through all the information to make sure that there's nothing that's privileged to keep all the information above board. I'm so not a legal person. I'm having a hard time putting this into words.
You're doing great, actually.
understanding.
You're doing great.
Okay. So this taint team goes through everything before the actual investigators get it to make sure they're not seeing anything that's privileged, right? So this is a pretty, this has been going on for a while. This is not something that just happened over the weekend.
Oh, no, no. This is a process that's been going on for a long time. And it was very purposeful. And let's face it, anytime justice is going to be doing something that touches this president, anything that touches this president, they are going to be so careful. They're going to do everything in their power to essentially guarantee that everything they're doing is right and will hold up in court because they know that it's going to be under a microscope. They know that the Republicans in the House and the Senate will turn their heads if they can and will attack those individuals if they can, because the president has no compunction to not attack the Bureau and the agency and State Department and anybody and everybody else if it suits him. So they're very careful. And this is not the first time that the feds have had to go after lawyers who've been potentially involved in criminal activity with their clients themselves. In fact, one of those who was convicted of a crime in this case was Richard Nixon's personal lawyer. So this is not the first time that this has happened. They know how to play. And frankly, if I were anybody who is being targeted by this investigation, Bob Mueller and the Bureau in general, I would be concerned. I would be petrified, frankly. If I had done something wrong or even hinted at potentially doing something wrong and I had the likes of the Mueller team against me, I would be petrified, because see, these are some of the best, brightest, most experienced, most capable people on the planet, and they are working together to create an airtight prosecution.
Right. So this then brings me to the next, you know, fear, which is with the walls closing in on him. Do you worry that Donald Trump is going to go out and, you know, wag the dog, that with this, the attack on Syria?
I'm petrified of it.
Right.
I'm petrified of it. And you know what? Strangely enough, you know what I'm more petrified of? Am I petrified of the capability of this president who's actually decided that he's, in my opinion, he's made it very, very clear that he's not here for love of country.
No.
He's here for love of Donald Trump. And he's more than willing to tear down every institution of this country in order to protect himself. He doesn't care. But what I'm particularly afraid of is I've watched hundreds of members of Congress who are willing to turn their heads and to allow it to happen and really to support his arguments, which only now you're only getting a handful of members who are saying, wait a second, this is inappropriate. What he is doing is fundamentally wrong. And they've been more than willing to stand behind not just this president, stand behind his attacks of men and women who put their lives on the line over and over again to support this country and to support what it is that we believe in collectively. And my biggest fear is that when the time comes where they need to actually put country before party, that they may not actually do it when the rubber really hits the road. It hasn't yet, but it's certainly coming.
And that's frightening. That's truly bone chilling. We have this situation with Syria now, where the reports are there was another chemical attack, ostensibly by al-Assad on his own people. Already there are questions being raised as to, you know, the legitimacy of the reports. There are always going to be those, especially in this era of Trump, deemed fake news. The question of what he's going to do now and the worries that he's going to do something pretty colossal to get the heat off of him for this Michael Cohen stuff and all the other heat that's coming down on him. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that is always a concern, because what we have seen from him over and over is he makes the decisions he wishes to make regardless of the true ramifications of it. And he does. I mean, when we look at what he said about Syria in the first place, we're going to get out. To simply unilaterally say we're going to get out, I mean,
right.
I understand the concern on the issue. I've spent an enormous amount of my time in the Middle East over the years. And the real problem here is this, is that what's most important is that we understand that right now what the Russians are doing, what the Turks are doing, what the Iranians are doing, what the Saudis are doing, what the Americans are doing, all impact that region in a way that we really, really need to slow down and figure out. This president simply doesn't care because from his perspective, it's about something else altogether.
How do we survive the next 2.5 years?
Boy, there's the big question. What I'm really hoping for is, in the end, what I'm hoping for is there will come a realization within, dare I say this, the Republican Party, that they have decided that this president is costing them votes, and that what they will do is at least honestly look at what's going on here. There are a lot of people who are really afraid of what this president is doing on a world stage right now. And I can talk to you about people in the State Department, people at the agency, people at the Pentagon, people at Justice, all across the board are seeing things they have never seen before. And I mean ever. And the problem that we face is that if there isn't the three legs of the stool, if there is no balance of power, no checks and balances within the American system, what we're seeing is an executive that's teetering on almost tyranny, because he's willing to do anything and they're willing to simply turn their heads and allow it to happen. That's what I'm afraid of. And I'm hoping that at some point they're going to decide, because they don't seem to want to do it for personal interest, or I should say at least for country and for patriotism, let's hope they finally come to the realization that they might lose their own elections if they don't do it. I'm willing to take that at this point.
I don't see that happening, though. I mean, all signs point to a massive blue wave coming in November, knocking on wood laminate here.
Right?
What's that?
I mean, that is the positive, because in the end, here's something we have seen, is if you look at the number of Republicans who've actually decided not to run in the House, this is the largest exodus we've seen
ever
since 1952,
wow.
And maybe back further than that, and maybe ever. And as a result, my point being that what you may see is this incremental shift within the party itself that said, you know what? There's a reason we're getting our heads kicked in, and that reason is the big orange guy that's in the White House. And if that happens, you're going to start seeing individual members of Congress simply say, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore, because they've decided they can't keep their job unless they stand up against him. And if that's what it takes, fine. I'm okay with that.
I hope so. But what we're seeing now are people like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, those who've dared to stand up to him, just step down, say, you know what, right. In this climate, I can't win, so I'm not going to run for re-election. Rather than fighting, yeah, they talk a good game every now and then, but they still vote with him. And then in the end of the day, they're going home.
You know, and I don't disagree with you, but I can tell you right now one thing. You can look at the last election cycle. And the one point that I think is the major point that needs to be made is there were a lot of Democrats who stayed home, a lot of them.
Yes.
And those Democrats didn't support the Democratic candidate because they simply stayed home. If you look at the number of Democrats who are fired up nationally right now, and I could make the same argument for the Republicans in previous election cycles, but in this particular case, if Democrats actually show up, And Republicans respond in the lukewarm fashion that they seem to be responding in right now, because they're looking at some of this and going, damn, look where we are. This could be a fundamentally different game, maybe not in 2018, but in 2020.
Wow. I don't know if you just heard that. We're having a hell of a thunderstorm here in South Florida right now. So if we all of a sudden disappear, it's because the power goes out. This is Florida Power and Light. It doesn't like electrical storms. We haven't had, this is like the first one of spring. We haven't had one in a while. So it's letting loose on us. So what do you think happens next with Michael Cohen and with Trump? I mean, we all seem to be girded for the next shoe to drop. Any idea what that shoe is going to be?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see next is you're going to see, and this is what I am afraid of, is Donald Trump's response. This is going to be Donald Trump deciding that he has to do something about this, because the real problem that he's facing right now is that the investigation, not just the Bob Mueller investigation, but this potential investigation against Cohen, is spinning out of control and spinning out of his hands. And so if he doesn't find a way to take control of it either at the Bureau, either at Justice, or both, then it could consume him. But the problem, of course, is if he tries to take control of them, it may actually create the conflagration that could consume him anyway. And that is really where we sit. My guess is the next step may be a misstep by this president.
Well, I guess we gird ourselves. Again, we're looking at 2.5 more years of this. So, Tums, get out the Rolaids. That's all I can say. Jack Rice, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and your insight. I always appreciate your input more than I can tell you.
Well, it's a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk soon. Travel safe.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Jack Rice. Find him at jackrice.net on the Twitters at Jack Rice. And he posts on Facebook a lot, too. So the very brilliant and well-rounded Jack Rice. Tomorrow, David Dayen's going to join us. I know he's firmly watching the Mark Zuckerberg hearing today. So maybe we'll find out what went on from him as well as some other stuff. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.